Introduction to Gideon for the second part of our series here this morning. And I'm going to start, though, by just doing a quick little update for you. And a number of you have asked me how it's going up in Mistissini, up in northern Quebec in the James Bay area, where I've had the privilege of doing work up there, partnering with our First Nation friends and the communities up there. And you've been asking me about the fires because they got evacuated a little over a week and a half ago. And the majority of them have now returned home. And so the Lord sent enough rain. The Lord sent enough rain to be able to control the fires. They're not out, but they're controlled. And so they're burning with less intensity. And the community is not in danger right now, which we're also very thankful for. So we had about 9 people staying in our home, and that for about the last, 9 or 10 days. And they just left yesterday to be able to head back home. And I think very thankful to be able to sleep in their own beds and back in their own community and to be able to realize that God has once again directed in such a way that their community was not taken over by the flames and by the smoke. And so my friend Redfern is here this morning with us, and he's heading back this afternoon. And we are going to be commencing our camp ministry on Monday. And we'll be doing that for the month of July up there. We've got volunteer teams that are going to be coming up for the month of July. I leave at the end of this week to be able to go up there for the month. And we have a team that's coming up here from Sunnyside. And so we have Dave Pratt and Elijah Barrett and Sage Collins. I know everybody by their first name. Thank you. All right. And then Mike and his son Nico and Flynn. And that are coming up as well. They're going to be coming up for our last full week in July where we do our teen camp. And so please keep them in prayer as they get ready and prepare for that. Keep me in prayer and Redfern in prayer as we manage the camp and help direct it and help be able to see these weeks really go well with the different age groups. And so that's where I'm going to be heading off and being able to do that. This morning, we're going to be doing part 2 of Gideon. And here's the question I want to be able to pose to you here this morning, and that is this. Have you ever wanted more of the Lord's presence and His power at work in your life? Have you ever wanted more? Maybe not just in your life, but in the lives of those around you. Have you ever wanted more? And by more, I mean more evidence of it, more demonstrations of it, more prayers that seem to be answered more powerfully, more specifically. Have you ever wanted more? The answer to that question for how that happens is that it starts within you. It starts within you. Oftentimes, I think we try to look at it in such a way that we say to ourselves, it has to be a change in circumstance. If I could find the right change in circumstance or the right change in my story, if this could be remedied, if this could be fixed, if this could be transformed, then I would definitely experience more and more of the Lord's power in my life. There is that wonderful saying, and I'm sure some of us have felt that at times and times before in that you can't soar with the eagles when you're surrounded by turkeys. And so if only my circumstances would change, and then maybe I could soar. Well, maybe a different church would work for me. Maybe if I could find a different church community. Do you realize that we and our subculture today within the church, and I don't just mean Sunnyside, I mean within the church in general, we are migratory. We are migratory. We are always seeming to look for something that we think can be found someplace else because it must be better. And so therefore, we again look and say to ourselves, the only way that I'm going to discover more of this power, more of this opportunity, more of God's presence, more of His promises happening, is if I'm able to find it someplace else. But what if it's me? Now, I don't mean me, okay? I mean, for all of us to be able to ask that question. What if it's me? What if it's me? What if that's where it needs to start? What if it's not a question of a change in circumstance, or a change in my surroundings, or a change in the way that life seems to be happening to me? What if the answer is, honestly, me? Here's the important thing that I want you to be able to realize, because I have learned in life, in my mentoring, in my coaching, in my discipleship, in my counseling, and working with people individually, that you start out with the iceberg, and you start out with the tip of the question, and then you go deeper, and then you go deeper. And then oftentimes I'll ask them the simple question, okay, what comes next? What's deeper here? What's deeper? Let's keep going. Right now, let's keep going. Let's keep going. What if this is the real question that we have to ask ourselves, that we have to confront within ourselves? And hear me on this. I want the power. I want that transformational power. I want that transformational presence of God to be real in my life. I want to be able to live better in the story that I have chosen. What if that is the core problem? What if the core problem is that, God, I want that. I want more of you. I really do. I want to see this stuff happen in my life. But the honest truth is, God, I want it in the story that I've chosen, that I'm writing. I want the story to be written the way that I want it written. I want the story to come out with the things that I want to see in the way that it should come out. God, that's what I want. See, when you come to the life of Gideon here, here's the fascinating thing about the guy. He considers himself, just to quickly summarize from last week, he considers himself the least of his clan. He considers himself the least of the family that he has. He says, I'm really nobody. I mean, seriously, I am nobody. And the truth is, he doesn't seem unhappy with just continuing that life of little or no significance. He doesn't seem too unhappy about it. Maybe there's times where he looks at it and wishes he could have a better story, but that better story was not the one that the angel delivered to him. You are a mighty warrior. Who, me? Are you kidding? And that you are going to deliver Israel from the hand of their enemy. Are you kidding? They have us so absolutely terrified. We're living in holes and caves and any place we can. Because they are unbelievably cruel and ruthless and destroying everything in the land. God sees your story differently than you do. And here's the problem. Do you trust his care for you and his recognition of the desires of your heart, as it says in the Psalms? Trust in him, delight yourself in him, and he will give you the desires of your heart. But what if that's not the way that you've written the story to achieve those desires? Are you still willing to trust his love and his care for you, that he's going to deliver, but also give you a story that you never thought you could have on your own? Gideon finds himself in that situation, and he agrees with God. Okay, I want to live the story you've offered me. I really do. What's the first step? And it says that very night, the Lord spoke to him and said, there's two idols in your father's household, in your father's courtyard, and everybody, by the way, in your community comes and worships these things. One's the Baal, one's the Asheroth. And I want you to take your father's second bull, the one that's 7 years old, and I want you to tear down these idols. I want you to tear down that Asheroth bull. I want you to tear apart Baal's idol. And then I want you to build a proper altar. And on that proper altar, you will offer that second bull as a sacrifice. So let me give you a little bit of context here too, so you can appreciate this a little bit more, okay? Why the second bull that's 7 years old? I mean, why this bull? Why does God specifically say that one that your father owns? First of all, there was a cultural thing at that time that would have been recognized, and that is that that second bull would have been the father's aspect of continuing wealth. This would be the bull that he was counting on to be able to have other cows and calves, et cetera, et cetera. He would have been counting on that bull. But here's the interesting thing. From God's perspective, was he communicating this message? From Leviticus 4, 13 and 14, where it says, and you can look this up at another time, but it says that when the community sins, take a bull, and take that bull and offer it as a sacrifice for the sin of the community. And the community had sinned. They had started following other gods. In Exodus 13, 12, there was also this that was made into law for the people of Israel at that time and for those who had any form of livestock. And that was that the first male born of any of the livestock was to be offered to the Lord. Was to be offered to the Lord. Gideon recognized that he had stepped away, that they had stepped away. And here were the visible reminders in the courtyard that they had stepped away from the fellowship of the Lord, from the presence of the Lord, from the promises of the Lord, from the blessings of the Lord. An amazing thing, as I pointed out last week before you as well, and that is that, but isn't it so easy for us to just go ahead and put the whole blame on God, where are you? And God looking at us and saying, I haven't moved. I haven't moved. Gideon does it. Does it at night because he's afraid. Well-founded fears, by the way, if you look at verse 30. And that well-founded fears, because it says later that the townspeople get together, find out who did it, and then say, this guy dies. This guy dies. He dies for defiling these gods. They're false idols. These false gods. He dies. And the amazing thing about it is that the father goes ahead and defends him. His father suddenly steps up and says, no. No. If Baal really is a god. Now, isn't that an interesting comment from a guy who had the altar built in his own courtyard and the Asherah pole put up in his own courtyard? And then all of a sudden he's standing there defending his son and saying, he doesn't die. If Baal's a god and really is a god, then let him defend himself. And in my reflections upon this week, I wondered to myself, is this because all of a sudden his dad has a moment where all of a sudden he's reminded of something? And I thought it was fascinating. The bull is 7 years old. The Midianites and Amalekites who have come into the land like locusts and just literally destroying everything and everyone started 7 years ago. And at that time was the father reminded all of a sudden that that bull belonged to you anyway, didn't it? It belonged to you anyway. And the rightful thing would have been to sacrifice it. And the rightful thing would have been to acknowledge at that time that we as a community have sinned against you. But now we suffer the consequences of a lack of acknowledgement of those things. And is his dad's life being worked in at the same time as Gideon's life is being worked in? Please remember this. The story you are living, where God is at work in your story, is never just about you. It's never just about you. How you respond is up to you. But what's happening in your story is also because God is doing work in the lives of all those around you as well. And then Joshua is given this little name here, and I just want to be able to touch on this quickly for you, just because I want you to be able to remember this. All of a sudden, the townspeople go and name him Jerubbaal. In other words, let Baal deal with him. In other words, a curse upon his life. You are going to be destroyed. You're going to die, probably miserably, and Baal's going to do it. And by the way, that's your destiny. I wrote this out because I just wanted to make sure I got the words right. And so please hear me on this. Never let how others see you or define you in a negative light become your identity. Let God write your story. If Gideon had simply gotten an end to what the pressure was of everybody else and the way that they looked at him, he would have been insignificant, nothing that could ever come out of his story, and also he now had this Baal god saying, oh, he's going to get you, you are cursed. But Gideon did not let that become his identity. Don't let the identity of what's been placed upon you by others in a negative light become your story, because it's not the way that God sees you. So easy, though, when we talk about idols, and so easy when we talk about and we look at a passage like this to be able to say to ourselves, do I have these things in my life? And I asked that question last week as well. But I asked the question again, do we have these things in our lives? What are these idols? Some of them in our lives are obvious. Some of them are obvious. If you are simply so wrapped up in wanting to make your story, and it's all about you, that's an idol. If your story is all about the fact that I just want financial security, I just want this type of thing, I just want that type of thing, I need to achieve this, I need to get this, I need to own this, that's your idol. If it's sin in your life, if it's something that you have been dealing with in the darkness that's never been brought into a light, that is your idol. If it's things in your life that you've never dealt with, though, but you just excuse, like anger or selfishness or not being charitable or not being giving, that is your idol. Those are more obvious. Fascinating thing this week was that I got an article that was sent to me by a fellow by the name of Alan Gilman. And I thought it was fascinating. Lord, amazing. Here he is bringing this up and sharing this week, and it relates so beautifully with the message. And in his article, he basically just says that most often the idols in our life are not obvious. They're not what we would say would be identified as an idol. And the most amazing example that he gave, and I just thought, wow, this is it. This is what I've been looking for, trying to figure out what that piece was that was missing. And he said, back in the book of Numbers, and that the children of Israel sinned, and what God did was he allowed poisonous snakes to come into the community and bite the people. And when they got bit, and they were being poisoned, and they were on the verge of dying, God said, set up a pole, and on the top of the pole, have a brass serpent on there. Matter of fact, we use it now as our identification for medical corps. And he said, put that on there, and anybody who looks to that bronze snake on the pole, and that will be healed. Now, just as an aside here, by the way, that is not what I would consider an answer to prayer. I would consider an answer to prayer being, get rid of the snakes, Lord. Take the snakes away. The Lord says, no, I'm leaving the snakes here, but I want you to realize who your real deliverer is and who your real healer is. That pole with that snake on it becomes an idol. Becomes an idol. And Alan Gilman pointed out in his article, and he said, 800 years later, they get rid of that snake. Hezekiah finally destroys it because the people had been worshiping it for all those years. Now, worshiping it in what way? Coming up to it and bowing down before it, etc.? No, looking at it as something that took the slight replacement of God. In other words, they came up and they looked at it and thought, healing came from this thing in the past. God, I need healing right now. So I'm looking to this that you gave us that brought healing to the people in the past. And God, I'm trusting you right now to bring healing in the story that I'm living in the moment for what I needed. And it became an idol because it drew us away from God. What are the practices that we do within our faith that actually don't draw us to God, they draw us away? What are the things that you hold on to that you say, man, this is sacred to me. This is unchangeable. This can't be anything done with this. This is important. This is the way that we do faith. I want to suggest to you here this morning that it's become an idol. It's become an idol. But it's a subtle one. It's a subtle one. But it is as equally destructive as if you'd set up an altar to Baal in your backyard. Because it's drawing you away from God himself, who says, look to me and me alone. And by the way, be open then with the way he wants to do things. Be open with the way he wants to do things. It may not be the way that they've always been done. Are we open to that? Because if we're not, what we're holding on to has become an idol. It has given us some sense of spiritual security outside of God. The Midianites, the Amalekites, and it says in other tribes as well, have all joined together. We know from Judges chapter 7 that that's 135,000 people that have come together in order to be able to go through the land. That's an impressive army. Wouldn't you agree? And 135,000 people who have already got you in a place of perfect surrender and submission. And it tells us that the Spirit of the Lord, in chapter 6, it tells us that the Spirit of the Lord came upon Gideon. Isn't that amazing? A fulfillment of God's promise earlier when the angel of the Lord first appeared before him and said, go in the strength you have. And Gideon says, I don't have any. And the Lord says, my presence will be with you. That's what's going to make all the difference in this, in your story. That's what's going to make all the difference in your prayers. That's what's going to make all the difference in the way that you do battle and the way you do things. My presence will be with you. And then it says, and the Spirit of the Lord came upon Gideon. Now, join me in this for just a moment, please, okay? From a human perspective, from the way that we look at life, from the way most of us look at life, who's got the greater power here? I know, the Christian answer is Gideon, right? That's the good church answer. Wouldn't you agree? You can all nod at that one. You're all right to nod at that one. It's not a trick question. I'm not trying to trap you, all right? The answer is yes, Gideon. Gideon, yes, of course, that's the proper church answer. How many of us have faced 135,000 armed and angry people who desire nothing but our death? And how many of you would look at that situation and say, yeah, the odds are on Gideon's side? God, the odds are on my side. 135,000 really, really angry people. And God, armed to the teeth. Yeah, and they want my destruction. But no, God, the odds are on my side. Would you not feel overwhelmed? I want to suggest this to you, please. And I need you to hear me on this. And that is this. If you choose to live the story that God has called you to live, you need to understand something. It probably won't go your way. Probably won't go the way that you like it written. But it will go better. Because you will see more things happen in your life than you ever thought could have been possible. And Gideon right now, from God's perspective, Gideon, the odds aren't just on your side. The victory is already there. These guys have already lost. They just don't know it. They just don't know it. This mountain has already been moved. You just don't see it. These obstacles can all be overcome. You just haven't got there yet. But Gideon, because I am with you and I've given you this story, nothing stands in your way. Isn't that wonderful? Isn't that a truth? We'd all just say to ourselves, man, that's great. You know something? I love that. Let's stick with that. Let's go with that. Let's make that our anchor. Let's move forward. Boom. The solid. Gideon puts out the war cry and says, come, join the fight. The Lord is on our side. I've been promised victory. And 32,000 guys show up. 32,000 guys show up. Now, this is all in chapter 7, but you can go ahead and read it there afterwards. The odds here are now 4-1. So me and, is it Luke here?
Yeah.
Luke. So me and Luke are looking at each other and saying, how many can you take? I can handle 4, Paul. Maybe 5. Maybe 6. You're older. You can handle the last 2? Yeah, no problem, Luke. Let's work it out. Okay. We got this. We got this figured out. Right, buddy? Okay. Then you follow the Old Testament law, which was absolutely clear, and that is that you were to stand up before any time that you went into a fight with the army of Israel, and you were to say this. If any of you is afraid, please feel free to go home. No shame. But please feel free to go home. And 22,000 left. And going, feet, don't fail me now. We're out of here. And the other 10,000 are questioning their decision. And now all of a sudden, your odds are 13-1. Luke, how are we feeling? Yeah, not so good. We're looking around ourselves, saying to ourselves now, okay, how many do you think they can take? You know, what about Jesse over here? Do you think he can handle something? Yeah, Brad, what about Brad? Brad's got the number. Yeah, he's going to do that too. Okay, all right. And that Redfern, oh, he's got at least 100. He can take 100. Okay, we're okay with that. 6'3", size he is. Oh, he got a hand. 13-1. And then God comes and looks at you and says, you still got too many. Have you ever felt in your story that you and God are not looking at the same story? That you're not both staring at the same obstacles, the same things that are in this story, and the same things that are going wrong? And then God says, no, this is what I want you to do. And at the end, you got 300 left. You're now, your odds are 450-1. I just want you to be able to understand that, okay? That means one of you, and that the entire group of people that you have, the 300, they're 50% more of them for every one of you. You get that? The math, did I do that math right? 300 to 450? Okay, somewhere, anyway. All right, forget the math. You are completely outnumbered. Completely outnumbered here. And finally God says, okay, all right, we'll do it with 300. But just don't ever say you did it. And I don't ever want you to think that you did it. I want you to realize that I did it. The enemy is far more aware of the power we carry inside of ourselves because of the covenant relationship that we have with the Lord Jesus Christ, because of what he has done for us on the cross of Calvary, and because of the fact that his presence lives within us through the power of the Holy Spirit. Please don't wait till you get to heaven to find out what you could have done. Please don't wait to get to heaven to find out what could have taken place in your story. Please don't wait till then. And if there are things here this morning that you know God is calling you to, if there's things that you know that God, you've been calling me, and truth is, I've been reluctant. If there are those things in your story that you know God has been calling you to, but the obstacles are keeping you from it, the mountains just seem so huge, the giants too large, the oppressive army that is against you, just too many of them. I want to invite you this morning to come to the Lord and say, forgive me for not realizing that with you inside of me, your presence, nothing can stand against what you want to see me do and what you want to see accomplished. And if you need to this morning, the altars are going to be open. I invite the worship team, please, to come back up. The altars are going to be open. And just come before the Lord. And very simply, before him, just lay your heart before him here this morning. You don't have to do it at the altar, but we've been told by many of you that you appreciate that opportunity. You can do it right where you're sitting. But just keep it real. Keep it real. Because God will. God will. He will take it as being real. So make your decision before him where it really starts. And that's inside of you, inside of your heart. Thank you.